Okay, so that's a little bit. Now there's some time for some questions or comments.
Okay, my question is, if a person is short in his obligations, then as a supervisor or even somebody close to that person, would it not then be our duty to somehow act our expectation?
Okay. So in terms of work, having expectations of what your employees would do or what your supervisor would do or expectations. Okay. There are certain kinds of expectations that we have in society, and you know, sometimes these are clear and sometimes they're like mud. Okay? Like, if you have a job, there might be a job description and there's certain expectations that are listed out in your job description of what you're supposed to do. So those are a kind of guideline, you know, and we know what we're expected to do. Yeah. And similarly, when we work with other people, we kind of have an idea of what they're expected to do. That doesn't necessarily mean everybody does what they're expected to do, does it? Yeah? Things come up, people have different ideas, people get sick, there's all sorts of stuff that comes up in the meantime that you have to attend to. So I think those kind of expectations, we have them because, you know, we need a job description. Otherwise, you go into the workplace and you don't know what you're supposed to do every day, or you don't know what the people you're working with are doing. So we need to have those kind of descriptions and expectations. But we also need to hold them a little bit lightly and recognize that although that's the job description, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's going to be able to do it all the time. Okay? And to be able to, you know, to know that things aren't always going to turn out the way we want or the way that we thought they would. And people aren't always going to come through for us and fulfill their expectations or their commitments. Okay? And this happens all the time. Whenever you work with people, you know, they don't always come through on their commitments or their promises or what they said they were going to do. And I know for myself, I often get quite upset when I'm counting on somebody to do something and they don't fulfill my expectation. But then I realize, okay, I also have to expect that not everybody's going to fulfill their commitments and their promises. Yeah?
Conversely speaking, if let's say a supervisor is over control, he's a control freak, and he over expects, so how do you respond to this kind of supervisor?
What do you do with a supervisor who's a control freak? I don't know. You know, the poor guy's suffering. Yeah? Isn't he? Somebody who's a control freak is suffering so much. And he might get on your case and, you know, nag you and pester you. I think the most important thing is that we try to assess what we can do and what we can't do and let people know in advance. So rather than promising to do things and then later not being able to fulfill it, I think it's better if we think well beforehand and then state directly to the person what we can do, by what time. Okay, so they know in advance. And if by some chance we miss the target, and we thought we could finish something by a certain date and we're not able to, then instead of dropping it in the middle and expecting other people to pick up the pieces, you know, if we see by Monday that we're not going to be able to finish what somebody needs by Friday, go to them on Monday and say, I'm really sorry, I can see already I'm not going to be able to do it by Friday, and I just want you to know that. Okay, so it gives people some time instead of them being left at the very end with saying, ah, you know, you didn't come through for me. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, what should you do when your lama or your teacher is doing something that you don't quite understand and that others don't approve of? For example, taking a consort. Well, it depends on your mind, okay? For some people, you know, they have strong faith in that person and, you know, it doesn't bother them so much if the teacher's doing something that they don't quite understand. For other people, this kind of thing, when somebody's acting in a way that is opposite to the general Buddhist way of doing things, then their mind is disturbed and they know that this teacher is not a good example for them. So sometimes you can go talk to your teacher if your teacher's doing something that you don't understand or something you don't approve of. And sometimes if the situation is such that you can't get a clear answer that makes sense to you, then you can keep a respectful distance from the teacher. You don't have to criticize them or throw out everything they've ever taught you. You can still appreciate what they have taught you in the past. But instead of relying on them as your principal teacher, you can rely on other people who have the kind of conduct that you respect and the kind of conduct that is a good example for you. So it depends very much on the individual. Okay, if we stop expecting or setting a standard for ourselves, will we end up not improving? Okay, I think there's a difference between expecting and aspiring. Okay, so if I expect myself to never get angry again, that's rather silly. Okay? If I aspire to never get angry again, that's beneficial. Okay? Because an aspiration is putting my whole heart into it, you know, seeing the value and aspiring for this. Yeah? And when we aspire, we can even aspire for things that we know are impossible. Nothing wrong with that. Bodhisattvas aspire for impossible things all the time. You know, may I lead all sentient beings to enlightenment. That's kind of impossible, isn't it? Yeah? But you aspire for it anyway, because what a wonderful aspiration to have. What an incredible way to live your life with that huge aspiration to be of, you know, so much benefit to all living beings. So we aspire for it. It doesn't mean that we expect ourselves to be able to do it tomorrow. Okay? So we aspire to become more patient and less angry, but then we have to practice the techniques and slowly work at it and become more aware and sit down and calm our mind down. We don't expect our anger to go away all of a sudden. Okay? So I think having very noble aspirations enables us to improve, but we don't need to expect that we fulfill them right away. Okay, if you are suggesting your good intentions to others, supposing loved ones, and they don't seem to listen, what should we do? Same thing. Here we go. We're trying to lead all sentient beings to enlightenment and they don't want to follow. Yeah? We have all these good intentions. We're so eager about the Dharma. We want somebody to take precepts. We want them to go to Dharma class. We want them to read, you know, Working with Anger. Don't we? They should definitely read Working with Anger. Yeah, so they don't get mad at us. But But then these people, you know, we're just trying to lead them to enlightenment. We're just trying to tell them things that will make them happy. And they just go, and read the newspaper. Don't you love it when you're talking to a family member and they read the newspaper? Or they sit and watch TV and flick your remote control. You're trying to talk to them and they're flicking the remote control. Okay, so this is the way it is, isn't it? Yeah? And just think of what the bodhisattvas put up with us. Okay, here the bodhisattvas are. Here the Buddhas are. Look at the Buddhas. They practiced the Dharma for 3 countless great eons to become enlightened for the sole purpose of leading us to enlightenment and benefiting us. And what do we do? When the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas come and try and suggest things to us to improve, we go, oh. What did you say? Or we go, who wants to do that? Come on, get a life. Yeah, who wants to be like that? So, I mean, look at the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, how hard they're trying to lead us to enlightenment, and we just ignore them, we space out, we criticize them. Yeah? So is it any wonder that those of us who aren't enlightened, when we try and give our wonderful advice to people, that they don't always listen? You know? So we just have to be patient. You know, we just have to be patient. Keep planting the seeds. Yeah, somebody might not be interested right now, but I think our responsibility is to act as a good model, so we should practice what we preach. Yeah, and then we should just keep planting the seeds, not pushing them, but, you know, leading a good life ourselves so that other people can see the benefits. Okay, so 2 questions here. How can we appreciate our parents? Did I read that right? Parents. Yes, I read it right. Bottom line is our parents gave us this body, didn't they? You know, they gave us this body. What an incredible thing. I mean, without this body, we wouldn't be able to practice Dharma. We wouldn't have a precious human life. We wouldn't be able to be here tonight and listen to the Buddha's teachings. Bottom line, they gave us this body. And that's an incredible gift, and we have to say thank you. You know? Then, in addition, they kept us alive the whole time we were infants. Yeah? How many of you are parents? Yeah. You know what you have to do to keep your kids alive? Yeah? They're always taking things and sticking them in their mouths and, you know, leaning over the stairs and doing all sorts of dangerous things. And you have to, you know, watch them and make sure they're safe. Well, that's what our parents did for us. They kept us alive as infants. You know, because we couldn't take care of ourselves then. We couldn't feed ourselves. You know, if we were choking, we couldn't cough it up. We couldn't cover ourselves if we were cold. We couldn't get rid of the blanket if we were hot. So just keeping us alive all the time when we were kids, I think that's something to be grateful to our parents for. Yeah? And then they gave us an education. Yeah. Now, we may not have appreciated that. They, you know, they sat us down and said, do your homework. And we said, I don't want to. I want to go play. Yeah. But actually, looking at it now, aren't we glad that we have an education? Yeah. Aren't we glad that our parents made us do our homework so that we learned something? And then our parents had to put up with us all the times when we were bratty as kids. My parents, When I was little, they started doing home movies. You know, they just got the camera to start, you know, filming. So my parents have a little film of me having a temper tantrum when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I'm sitting there, right there on the phone. So because my skates didn't fit right, you know, I was so mad. And they filmed it. Okay. But then when I think about it, wow, I mean, they had to put up with me behaving like such a brat. No? And they had to discipline me and teach me some manners and teach me how to function in the world. So even though I didn't like it at the time, looking back on it now, I'm grateful to them for that. Okay? So when we think in this way, we can appreciate what our parents have done for us. No. Now, our parents may have not been the perfect ideal parents that we want them to be, but where in this world are we going to find perfect ideal parents? Okay? Especially when our opinion of what a perfect parent is changes every day. Yeah? So I think, again, just appreciating them for what they did do for us instead of always complaining about them. And then the second question here is, what happens after death? Well, that depends. Okay? From a Buddhist perspective, if we ordinary beings get reborn after death, those of us whose minds are under the influence of ignorance and karma, then after death we get reborn. Our mind stream is attracted to another life form, another kind of body, and we are conceived in that body. Now, what body we're conceived in, what we get reborn as, that depends on which karma ripens at the time of death. Okay? So karma simply means our actions, what we think, what we say, what we do, all of our verbal, physical, and mental actions are karma. Okay? This karma, these actions, lead seeds on our mind stream, and we have a whole diversity of various karmic seeds on our mind stream. And then depending upon which ones ripen at the time of death, then our mind stream is attracted to take rebirth in one body or another one. Okay? So this is a very good reason to be conscientious and mindful and careful about the actions that we do while we're alive, because we are creating our own future through what we're doing right now. Okay, at times when our loved ones are sick, we feel very helpless and sad, and even angry with ourselves. Things are even worse when we see more people suffering and dying in the hospitals. What should we do as Buddhists to help them? Okay. And so instead of being upset, what can we actually do? First of all, I think expecting that sickness occurs is wise, you know. We have a body. As soon as we have a body like this that's under the influence of afflictive emotions and karma, there's going to be illness and aging and death. There's no way around it. Okay? So expecting illness and aging and death, knowing that they're a part of life, they don't mean failure. You know, expecting them to happen, then we can be a little bit prepared for them. Yeah? And not freak out so much when they happen. So it's true that sometimes when people are sick, we do feel very helpless. We care very much about other people. We don't want them to be ill. We want them to live long. And we can't control, can we? We can't make them better. Okay, so we have to let go. You know, we can't make things turn out the way we want. If somebody's sick, then instead of expecting ourselves to cure them, let's try and make them comfortable. Okay? Let's be sensitive to their needs as a sick person instead of being angry at them for being sick. Let's try and make them comfortable and realize that they're suffering. Yeah. If somebody's dying, then let's try and help them to die peacefully. They're going to die anyway. We don't need to feel helpless because we can't keep them alive. But what we can do is to help them have a peaceful death, keep the environment around them peaceful, talk about their accomplishments in life, encouraging them to forgive the people they need to forgive and to apologize to the people they need to apologize to. So there's ways that we can help. Yeah. So we shouldn't always think of helping others as being completely changing the situation, because some situations we can't change. Helping others can mean helping them adapt to the situation. Yeah? Same thing, you know, when we think of people in the hospital who are so ill. There's a meditation called Tonglen. In Tibetan, it means taking and giving. And so it's a very wonderful meditation to do, where we imagine taking the suffering of others upon ourselves and giving them our happiness. So this is a very good meditation to do. I can't go into it, explain it at depth right now, but there's one book that's called Transforming the Heart, and if you get it, in chapter 11, there's an excellent description of the taking and giving meditation. So that's another way to help and to be connected with other people, even though we may not be able to cure them from all their illness or solve all their problems. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think this will be the last question here. So what to do if somebody persists in wanting to commit suicide? It's hard to let go at expectations of not wanting him or her to do so. Very true. Very true. It's hard to let go of those expectations. I think if somebody is suicidal, that it's a terrible tragedy in the sense that they aren't realizing the value of their life, and they are blind at that moment from seeing the preciousness of their human existence and the possibility to live a really meaningful life. So I think sometimes just talking to people, if people are suicidal, finding out what it is that's the big issue for them, and then talking to them about that. You know, sometimes they're just trying to find meaning in their life, sometimes they're trying to find love. There's many different things. So trying to help them maybe let go of some of their expectations and to see the real meaning and purpose in their life and the beauty in their life. If somebody commits suicide, again, you can't control it, can you? It's a tragedy. It's nobody's fault. There's no reason to blame the other person. And there's no reason to blame ourselves because we think we should have been able to prevent it. Again, we can't control. So we do our best. Okay? Now, there's many questions here that I didn't get around to. I didn't fulfill everybody's expectations. Things aren't turning out the way that you want. Unless you want the talk to end quickly, then you're happy. So I apologize. Yeah. If you look in I Wonder Why or Buddhism for Beginners or some of the other books that I've written or some of the books His Holiness the Dalai Lama has written, you may find answers to your questions. Yeah. So do some reading. Check out the websites, read the books, and you may find some answers. Or come back day after tomorrow and write your question again. And then maybe I can answer it.
Thank you very much.